This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Out in front for Scheifele, hopped over his stick. Line A, taking off the puck. It's a two-on-one the other way. Burns, down the right wing boards. Burns, near side, Pavelski, a shot, he scores! Joe Pavelski wins it in overtime for San Jose. They do so shorthanded, and San Jose wins their first game of the year against the Jets. Final score, the San Jose Sharks 3. The Winnipeg Jets 2 in overtime.
And for the first time in 2019, the Winnipeg Jets lost a game on home ice. That was last night. Our buddy Paulie Edmonds with the call. The San Jose Sharks victors over the Jets, scoring the rare shorthanded overtime winner. Joe Pavelski, off a nice pass from Brent Burns, wires it past Connor Hellebuck, and the San Jose Sharks defeated the Winnipeg Jets by a 3-2 margin. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by producer extraordinaire Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsburg away from the program on this Wednesday evening. The Jets, as I mentioned, Shawnee, 3-2 defeat last night at the hands of the San Jose Sharks. Sort of a tale of two separate games there. The first period was relatively even. Maybe you can say the San Jose Sharks had a little bit of an advantage over the Winnipeg Jets. The second period, the Jets were certainly the aggressor. They were certainly the better team in the second stanza. And then the third period, it was all San Jose last night. And they end up getting the tying goal, that coming off of the stick of Marcus Sorensen a couple minutes into the third period. And then after the Winnipeg Jets have two late power plays, including one at the end of the third period and then one in overtime, it is the shorthanded goal by Pavelski that puts the San Jose Sharks over the top, winning the game 3-2.
Odd feeling. We haven't experienced that in a while, Drew. Leaving Bell MTS Place after watching the home team suffer a loss. It had been a while. Perhaps, I dare I say, spoiled, if need be. But yeah, what a tremendous hockey game. A great breakdown. You're talking about just shots alone. I mean, San Jose just pummeling the Jets in the third, 16-6. So they really turned it on in the third period. And power play, yeah, you said it. Kind of let the Jets down. They went 0-for-5 last night, and then, of course, giving up that shorthanded game winner. How about the pass by Brett Burns? Pass is beautiful. The play on the wall to force Line A to make a decision, strips him of the puck, goes 2-on-1. I'm not sure if Blake Wheeler would have played it the same had he watched that tape, but, mm-hmm. I mean, Joe Pavelski picks opposite corner, Hellebuck slides him. I mean, what more can you say about Joe Pavelski? The guy's an absolute workhorse. I mean, fun game, potentially a playoff series.
Yeah, well,
and it would be a fun one. Had a little bit of a snarl that game. There was some animosity. There was some big hits. There was some roughness.
Mm-hmm.
Fun game.
It's certainly in the realm of possibility for it to be a Western Conference final between the Jets and the Sharks. I don't foresee a situation in which those two teams could meet before the Western Conference final, because that would mean one of those teams would have to drop into a wild card spot, and I don't see that happening. You mentioned, the physicality. I mean, I was, post-game, I was talking to Justin Braun in the San Jose Sharks dressing room, and I asked him about the battle he had, all game long with Adam Lowry, and he sort of, had a bit of a wry smile on his face. He said, "Lowry got me about 6 or 7 times," he said, and, I counted 4 solid body checks on the forecheck, where Adam Lowry was an absolute beast last night, mm-hmm. just, driving, clean hits. But Justin Braun certainly noticed post-game and acknowledged it, that Adam Lowry was a very physical force, and that the San Jose Sharks had difficulty with him. I mean, the big takeaway from that game, I mean, the Jets get a point and the Sharks get the bonus point, and so it's not like it's a regulation time loss. The big question mark, and allegedly he's day-to-day and he's a possibility for tomorrow in Montreal, is the health of Josh Morrissey. He left the game in the first period, came back for about a shift to start the second period, and people thought maybe the Jets dodged a bullet. But it was on that power play that the Sharks scored on in the first period. Logan Couture got their first goal. It happened right after Josh Morrissey blocked a shot, and he was sort of sprawled out on the ice. And contrary to what we saw against Columbus last week, where the refs blew the play dead when Brandon Tanev took a shot off the numbers. This time they let the play continue. Logan Couture scores the goal. Josh Morris, he goes straight down the tunnel to the Winnipeg Jets dressing room, returns for that one shift in the second period, and then the Jets don't see him for the rest of the game on the blue line, and his absence was certainly a key factor in that game. The Jets, from my perspective, certainly tired out in the third period, only playing with those three defensemen, none of whom are as good as Josh Morrissey, certainly. And if you look at the, you know, the Corsi for the possession stats in that third period, the Sharks with almost 65% Corsi for versus the Jets 35%, a dominant third period by the Sharks. A big part of that, I think you have to attribute to the absence of Josh Morrissey from the game.
Absolutely. I mean, a great point. And one thing I really noticed yesterday with the absence of Morrissey and along with Dustin Byfuglien being sidelined is the Jets somewhat struggle to move the puck from the defense up to the forwards and transition the puck out of their zone. Two guys that are excellent outlet passers for the Winnipeg Jets are Dustin Byfuglien and Josh Morrissey, two guys who eat up a lot of minutes as well. So I thought the Jets, I don't want to say struggled, but you saw where the team was lacking yesterday in that department, the ability to transition the puck out of their zone. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, when you look at some of the time on ice, I mean, Jacob Trouba played 27:52. I mean, Ben Chiarot was elevated to over 25 minutes. Tyler Myers, I know he likes the heavy minutes, but again, over 25 minutes. Joe Morrow was up to almost 16 minutes. Mm-hmm. Kulikov, almost 19. So you saw where the workload was dispersed, and you saw I don't want to say the lack of quality, but you saw the decline in talent.
When you're the Winnipeg Jets and you're without Dustin Byfuglien, obviously, who I thought was going to play yesterday, and then obviously the Jets held him out, but he'll return to the lineup tomorrow night in Montreal. You're without Dustin Byfuglien, you lose Josh Morrissey, well, your defense is getting depleted, certainly, and you saw that. You know, they sort of withstood the fury of the San Jose Sharks, and the second period it was fine for the Jets. In fact, the Jets were very good in the second period, mm-hmm. and you can point to the Jets did score to take a 3-1 lead, and then the San Jose Sharks challenged on an offside challenge that they won, and in the dressing room post game, the Sharks pointed to that instance as probably the, you know, the quote unquote the cliche TSN turning point. Instead of being down 3-1 to a tremendously talented home team and hockey team in the Winnipeg Jets,
who are very good entering the third period with the leads,
right? Who've been good at you know, clamping down on a team getting back into it. Instead, it's 2-1, and then the Marcus Sorensen goal where he picks up the loose puck in front of Connor Hellebuck there early in the third. It's a whole different ball game if that offside isn't challenged correctly. And you know, the Sharks themselves pointed to that as a TSN turning point.
Yeah, and you could kind of see, you know, you don't want to see the word dejected, but you could see that it kind of took a little bit of the wind out of the Jet sails.
A little sag, I thought.
Absolutely, and yeah. You know, maybe like a woe is me type moment where I can't believe this is happening again, and maybe do you think maybe a little bit of extra pressure on the boys for trying to get the win for 1500th game of Paul Maurice, or do you think they shut that notion out the minute puck drops?
Yeah, I think they always want to get a win and they always expect to get a win. I don't think that factored into their thinking very much. In that instance, I think it was a function of two pretty good hockey teams playing against each other. Both teams entering the game with depleted lineups, the Jets without Byfuglien, the Sharks without Carlson, and then the Jets losing Morrissey in the midst of that game certainly hurts as well. That being said, when you have a power play in the last couple minutes of regulation, in the last, I think the puck over glass penalty, I think, was taken with about 90 seconds to go in the third period. And the Jets had a golden opportunity there to maybe steal the win in regulation. They can't get anything going on the power play. Then you take a too many men on the ice penalty in overtime. The Sharks did almost just as the first penalty expired. The Jets had every opportunity to win that game if their special teams had been able to come through whatsoever. The power play just wasn't sharp aside from the disallowed goal, which would have been a power play goal by Mark Scheifele. Instead, I mean, you saw a number of opportunities where Patrick Laine in the Ovechkin spot, about two, three, four shots in a row simultaneous, one after another, and Martin Jones was up to the challenge in those instances, and the power play for the Jets just wasn't sharp enough. And it was interesting. Post-game, again, I was talking to Pete DeBoer, and he said, you know, a 4-on-3 power play for a team is a lot more difficult than a 5-on-4 power play. And I thought it was an interesting point he made. He said most NHL teams, most NHL coaches would rather have a 5-on-4 power play situation than a 4-on-3 power play situation just because they're used to it. They've practiced it. They know how to handle the situation, whereas the power play, the one that started in the third period and then ended in overtime, and then the one that started anew in overtime, we're all 4-on-3. And the Jets sort of looked a little discombobulated because that's not usually a scenario you're practicing very often. Sure, there's more space on the ice, but the Jets just didn't look like they knew how to line up properly. They didn't look like they knew how to set up properly. And, you know, does that factor into the turnover and leading to the Sharks game-winning goal shorthanded? Well, I don't know that you can make a direct correlation, but it was an interesting comment from Pete DeBoer that most coaches and most teams would rather have a 5-on-4 power play than a 4-on-3 power play.
That is interesting, actually, and perhaps as well more congestion in front of the net, less open space, less seams, less passing plays, but yeah, it's a tough play. And do you want to watch Patrick Laine maybe eat that puck on the wall, wait for some reinforcements to arrive, as opposed to just leaving it kind of dangling for Brett Burns to poke away? Maybe we're nitpicking, but
I don't know if we're nitpicking. I think it's just the lack of urgency that people are frustrated with when it comes to Patrick Laine's game, where, you know, he seems to think that he's got more time, or he's got he doesn't have that extra split second. And I don't think it's probably a combination of not scoring. It's a combination of maybe the speed of the game is right now a little challenging to him for whatever reason. But you think you have that extra second where you can maybe be a little bit cuter than you can be, or maybe you were able to get away with being that cute previously in your career. But right now in the NHL, instead what happens, Brent Burns picks your pocket and you have, two ultra talented players coming down against a forward that leads to the game winning goal for the San Jose Sharks. It's just that urgency that Laine doesn't yet have in his game. I thought he was, I didn't think he was great last night, certainly not even strength, but at this point in time, I don't expect greatness, even strength, from him, because it's clear that Laine, Little, and Roslovic aren't going to be great at even strength right now. They, for whatever reason, it doesn't work. And until Paul Maurice acknowledges that and decides to change it up at even strength, I think we know what we're going to get from that line while at even strength play. On the power play, I mean, usually the way he was firing it, one of those shots can very easily go in. So he was more trigger happy, which I think is good for him. And he certainly had a lot of shot attempts. But it's that urgency when he has the puck that is still, I mean, it's not a new phenomenon, but it's still a bugaboo that Patrick Laine has in his game.
Yeah, and it's blanking on me right now, but there was a game, I want to say about close to maybe a month ago, when he was on that ridiculous pace, but it was a very similar play. He's in his office, Blake Wheeler feathers him a pass across, he blasts a one-timer, misses the mark by just a hair, puck rims along the wall, Wheeler gets it again, fires it right back to Laine, and he just blasts it home. Yesterday, amidst his struggles, three in a row right to him, and he misses on all three. So it's real indicative, and it's real obvious right now that he's fighting it. But yeah, you want to see maybe a little more urgency when he doesn't have the puck, engage himself in other ways amongst in the game. And yeah, I don't know if this if the Roslovic Little Laine combo is working 5-on-5. I thought Brian Little played a really good game yesterday. I thought he was tremendously responsible, other than that scramble goal where Marcus Sorensen somehow was the only one to find the puck in that jumble of players. First of all, how about the flow on Marcus Sorensen? He has his helmet ripped off in front of the net. Me and Paulie Edmonds looked at each other, and Paulie goes, "This is a Pert Plus commercial."
He's got good hair.
Some fine lettuce.
Yeah, as yours truly, who once had a fine head of hair that no longer does, I can appreciate Marcus Sorensen's haircut there.
And quickly, just before we tee up the Habs game, a real big night for Matty Perreault. He told Paulie Edmonds post game he wanted to get the goal to celebrate his 300th point in the NHL so that he could celly. He got it. Congratulations, number 85.
Yeah, so the Jets obviously dropped their first game at home since the new year. They're in action tomorrow night in Montreal, the start of a three-game road trip, a 3-4 night situation. When we come back, we're going to preview that game between the Jets and the Montreal Canadiens. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You'll drop for Andrew Kopp. 3-3. Back in front for Kopp. Leo Nikkiou scores! Sammy Nikkiou has his first NHL goal. And the Jets have regained the lead.
Well, that didn't take long. And yes, the look on his face says it all.
That goal by Sammy Nikkiou is first in the NHL, as you heard Dennis Bayak on the call. That was from late last season in Montreal, and the kid got his first taste of NHL action, scored his first goal. The Jets went on to a victory over the Habs. The two teams haven't met yet this year. Last year, the Jets were one of the top teams in the NHL, and the Habs were going through a misery of a season. A role reversal, not a role reversal, but the Montreal Canadiens are a much better team this season, as they have sort of quietly climbed up the standings in the NHL's Eastern Conference. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assar with you in studio. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. You know, Sean, in preparing for the show tonight and on Saturday, this past Saturday, when we actually did a segment talking about the Habs a little bit, it just sort of jumped out to me. All of a sudden, the Montreal Canadiens have overtaken the Boston Bruins, and they're only a point behind the Toronto Maple Leafs. I guess that will be 3 points now, because the Leafs were victorious tonight over the Ottawa Senators. But all of a sudden, the Montreal Canadiens are in the conversation there as one of the, obviously not at the Tampa Bay Lightning level in the Atlantic Division, but they're battling for second spot in the Atlantic Division, and that sort of came out of nowhere alongside the New York Islanders. I would say the Montreal Canadiens are one of the surprise teams in the NHL this season.
Absolutely, and did anyone give Montreal Canadiens any credit to be anywhere near third in the Atlantic entering the season? I believe when we sat there and did our season preview show,
yeah,
I don't think any of the three of us had them at least making the playoffs, but here they are scrapping for their postseason lives, 7-2-1 in their last 10, and they have been getting it done. I mean, you look at what Max Domi's been able to do. You look at Kasperi Kotkaniemi, some young guys that are producing for them. Mm-hmm. Brendan Gallagher's really upped his game as of late, and they're a pretty formidable opponent right now for the Winnipeg Jets, entering a pretty raucous barn. Luckily, if Josh Morrissey can't go, we've got Sammy Nikkiou locked and loaded.
Obviously, yeah, with his history of success at the Bell Center. But, this Habs team doesn't have a superstar. I mean, they have Carey Price net, and he's playing at a superstar form right now. But they don't have a superstar in their offense. They just sort of come at you wave after wave after wave, so that you, not that you can ever take a shift off, of course, but that's how they sort of get their goal scoring. It comes by committee for the most part, and you look at their numbers, and there's nobody that jumps out at you. And, you know, right now, Brendan Gallagher leads the Habs with 21 goals. And then Max Domi comes over from the Arizona Coyotes. And you're wondering, is that a good trade in how they acquired Domi for Alex Galchenyuk? Well, that certainly has worked out for the Habs this year. Domi leads the team with 47 points and is really affirming himself as a top line centerman in the NHL. Jonathan Drouin, he's second on the team in points. Of course, he came over 2 years ago from the Tampa Bay Lightning. And then Thomas Tatar, what can you say about this guy? You know, he was acquired in the Max Pacioretty deal from the Vegas Golden Knights. Tatar, his name wasn't the big name in the trade. The big acquisition in that trade was Nick Suzuki, the young up and coming player for the Montreal Canadiens, who's expected to, you know, be a core member of the team going forward. But Thomas Tatar has been absolutely incredible this year for the Habs. 16 goals, 23 assists, 39 points, third on the team. you know, just wave after wave of forward group comes at you, and this is a very good possession team. We saw it last night against the San Jose Sharks. The San Jose Sharks are another very good possession team, and the Habs are actually, if I recall correctly, fourth in the NHL at 5-on-5 Corsi 4 at 54.13%. So this is going to be a stiff test for the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow in facing a very talented Montreal Canadiens team that is certainly going to be a challenge for the Winnipeg Jets, as opposed to the team they defeated last year in Montreal, which was a team and a bit of an organization that was in disarray.
Yeah, a little more direction now in Montreal. I believe their team has a bit more. They're not searching for an identity. They kind of know who they are. Mm-hmm. And Drew, the Jets get to see Joel Armia for the first time tomorrow. The first meeting with Big 40.
Well, and so Joel Armia is actually playing on an interesting line. That third line for the Montreal Canadiens is an all-Finnish line right now. Armia with Kotkaniemi, who of course is their dazzling first-round draft pick rookie that he's been terrific in his rookie season for the Habs.
Remember when everyone in Montreal freaked out that Philip Zadina wasn't selected and they took Kotkaniemi?
It's looking like
working out okay.
Looking okay right now. Zadina actually having a decent year, though, of course, at the AHL level.
Moose just played.
Yeah, against the Grand Rapids Griffins, the farm team of the Detroit Red Wings. They would have been fine either way, but Kotkaniemi has been a wonderful revelation for the Habs. And then the third Finnish player on that line, Arturi Lehkonen, is also a very good player, sort of just quietly goes about his work for the Montreal Canadiens, 24 points in 54 games. So Armia, Kotkaniemi, and Lehkonen, a very talented third line for the Winnipeg Jets, Montreal Canadiens that the Jets have to be aware of entering tomorrow night's contest. What can you say about Carey Price? Carey Price started the year a little bit slowly in terms of his performance and goal, but he's been absolutely dynamite since then, a .916 save percentage and a 2.53 goals against average. But I think if you look at those numbers from, let's say, December 15th through today, they're even better than how they were. He's up at the top of the NHL, .937 save percentage and a 1.88 goals against average since December 15th. So those are the Carey Price as number one goalie in the entire NHL elite goaltender numbers that the Jets are going to have to presumably contend with. I'd be shocked if it's anybody other than Carey Price in net for the Habs tomorrow night.
It will be Carey Price.
It'll be Carey Price.
But a really interesting stat, the Habs averaging 33 shots a game. That's sixth in the NHL. And we know the Jets like to give up a lot of rubber. They like to let a lot of team, well, I'm not sure if they enjoy it, but they do. They allow a lot of shots again. So Montreal's going to be firing the biscuit a lot. I expect whoever is in net tomorrow, I assume it's Hellebuck.
Yeah, I mean, I am with this 3-4. Yeah, with this 3-4, I would go Hellebuck tomorrow night, obviously in Montreal. I mean, I think you want your number one goalie in that instance, in that sort of the honor of playing in Montreal. I would assume you're going to go with
Brossois.
Yeah, thank you. My brain went blank there for a second. Lauren Brossois on Saturday afternoon against the Ottawa Senators, and then you go back to Hellebuck on Sunday against Buffalo. Mm-hmm. I could see them going with Hellebuck in Ottawa, but I would go. I mean, obviously the Ottawa Senators are not as good of a team as the Buffalo Sabres. Not that the Sabres are world beaters or anything, just outside the playoffs. But I mean, I assume you go Brossois in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. Against the worst team in the NHL, and then you go Hellebuck with the little more competition. Hellebuck has been playing better hockey as of late.
He looked great. He looked really good yesterday. He was tracking the puck tremendously. There was a couple bobblers that he just calmly swiped up. He looked like he was tracking the puck a lot better, looked really confident, the soft, big, and square, as they say. Mm-hmm. And I thought, a perfect shot by Joe Pavelski on that game winner, but
yeah, you can't blame him. I mean,
yeah, you can't.
None of the goals last night were Connor Hellebuck's responsibility. I would expect him to go Thursday, Sunday. I suppose he could possibly go Thursday, Saturday, and then Brossois gets the second half of the back-to-back on Sunday afternoon. We'll know more about that on the weekend, but regardless, tomorrow I would expect it to be Hellebuck against Carey Price in goal. The Habs don't, 12th in goals for in the NHL, so for a team that doesn't have that dynamic goal scorer, that dynamic point getter in their offensive lineup, they've been able to do it well this year with the offense by committee. 18th in goals against. Again, that's, I think, that 18th in goals against is more reflective of earlier in the year where the Habs were struggling, where Carey Price was struggling, where Shea Weber wasn't yet back into the Montreal Canadiens lineup as he returned, coming off of, I believe it was knee surgery or whatever it was. So, that number as 18th in the NHL in goals against, I think, is a little misleading. You know, as I mentioned, since December 15th, Montreal Canadiens, Carey Price, 937 save percentage and a 1.88 goals against average. So I would not expect a shootout tomorrow night in Montreal.
Yeah, it's always a defensive battle when you've got Carey Price in net. You know, you're not going to expect to light the lamp like it was at the Anaheim Ducks. I was going to say, you know, you don't expect to light up John Gibson, but... Well, that happened, but...
Well, the Anaheim Ducks are... I mean,
we could spend an hour talking about just how terrible...
What's worse than a tire fire? I mean...
Train wreck? Is that...
A train wreck, a nuclear explosion. I mean, you know, they're a garbage fire. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they're a recycling plant on fire. I'm not even sure.
That'd be bad.
Yeah.
That'd be bad for the environment.
Yeah. There are all sorts of bad things with the Anaheim Ducks night after night.
And also, Dustin Byfuglien should be back in the lineup tomorrow.
Yeah, Byfuglien to play tomorrow, barring something unforeseen or some, you know, setback or probably fresh injury at this point in time in the morning skate. The big question, of course, is Josh Morrissey, and without him in the lineup, Sammy Nikiu, you would expect, and you're all of a sudden your left side of your Jets defense though is looking pretty thin. Mm-hmm. You know, when you really got, I guess, Dmitry Kulikov as your top pairing left side defenseman in that situation, which isn't necessarily a scenario you want to go into with three games in four nights.
I would agree with that. One area, though, that I think the Jets can kind of take advantage of, Montreal is ranked 28th in the league in faceoffs. They ran at 47.7%. So the Jets have been pretty stellar. Adam Lowry specifically in the dot. Look for the Jets to exploit maybe that part of the game.
Yeah, that probably comes with having such young players taking your draw up the middle. When, I mean, Max Domi, you know, he's a young player still, and you see how much veteran leadership or veteran guile plays into face-off victories. So Max Domi, sort of a younger player, still trying to get his feet under him in terms of the face-off circle. Jesperi Kotkaniemi as your third line centerman. Well, he's 18 years old. Mm-hmm. He's just sort of thrown to the lions when it comes to the faceoff thought there. So that leaves Philip Deneau as your top line center. Now, again, not a veteran himself. So to your point, Sean, the Jets should be able to gain possession off the draw relatively easily against a bottom faceoff team like the Montreal Canadiens. When we come back, Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com in Montreal joins me. I recorded this interview about 45 minutes ago or so to talk about tomorrow night's contest between the Jets and the Habs. Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Welcome back to NHL This Week. We are on TSN 1290 Radio. It is Wednesday evening. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Pleased to be joined on the line now by Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com to talk about the Montreal Canadiens. Of course, the Jets and the Habs meeting for the first time tomorrow evening in Montreal. Mark, good evening, and thanks very much for joining me.
Oh, no, thank you very much for having me. It's an ugly evening in Montreal. It's freezing rain for the, you know, three out of the last four nights, so I've got nothing better to do than sit here in my nice warm house and speak hockey.
Well, I'm thankful that I was able to get here to the studio without running into anything, because the streets are sheets of ice here in Winnipeg too, so it looks like we got something in common on this wintry evening. Mark, obviously brought you on to talk about the Habs, probably one of the surprise teams in the NHL alongside the New York Islanders. I think it's snuck up on a lot of people now that the Montreal Canadiens are in fact in the third spot in the NHL's Atlantic Division. I don't think anybody saw that coming at the beginning of the year. You know, what has been the secret to success for the Montreal Canadiens as of late to see them rise up the Eastern Conference standings?
Yeah, well, and here's the crazy part. As it stands, if the playoffs started today, the Montreal Canadiens would have home ice advantage, which absolutely no one predicted, including myself. I really pegged them as a bottom five team, and I missed the mark there. But what they've been doing is using their fantastic depth. They essentially don't have a first line you can match up with other teams in the NHL, But once you combine the first, second, and third line, you're getting secondary and tertiary scoring almost every night. And it makes it really hard for opposing teams to shut them down. So they lack superstars, but they do have a ton of goal scorers. You know, maybe not the elite ones, but guys that any given night, you have two or three guys that show up. And so far, it's been sustainable throughout the year. Habs are controlling the shots, they're controlling the scoring chances, and because of it, they're controlling the goals.
Well, in preparing for the show tonight, Mark, one of the things that jumped out at me about the Montreal Canadiens is just how good they've been as a possession team. We know where they are in the standings, but their possession numbers are top five in the NHL. I mean, could the argument be made that this team could even be achieving more than they are currently, strictly based on how they're controlling the play?
Yeah, well, you know what? It's funny because I did mention that recently. I'm trying not to hype them up too much. But statistically speaking, the Canadians should actually be ahead of the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. If you look at what normal results are and taking that many shots and getting that many scoring chances. That being said, we have to keep in mind this is still a team that has really shaky defense. We have to give credit to Claude Julien, what he's doing up front, but there's still some issues here. And thankfully, Carey Price has essentially returned to form. And, it's perfect timing because with Shea Weber back, Carey Price back, and the forwards all scoring, everything seems to be coming together at the right time. So, I'm gonna call them a dark horse team. I don't want to pump their tires too much, but don't be surprised if the Canadians make some noise in the playoffs. That's the point where the hype has reached here in Montreal.
Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com is my guest on NHL this week. Mark, you mentioned Carey Price, and the early part of the season, he was average at best, I would suggest. It's really only been in the last 6 to 8 weeks where we're seeing Carey Price look like the number one goaltender in the NHL that we're so accustomed to having him be. Is there a shift in his attitude? Is it strictly the return of Shea Weber? Or is he finally getting the necessary support from the players in front of him that's allowing him to recapture the form that we were so used to seeing for so long?
Yeah, it's a really good question because, we've seen Carey Price do this without Shea Weber. So I'm apprehensive when it comes to giving all the credit to Shea Weber's return. But if you look at his numbers since the November 27th game, Carey Price has essentially been the second best goalie in the league ever since Weber's been back in the lineup. So, credit where credit's due. Shea Weber has helped. Carey Price has done his part. He's well rested as well. Skipping out on the All-Star game seems to have been a great decision. Mm-hmm. And, other than a really poor showing in November, he's been a top three goalie this year, which is a scary thing when you think about it. If the Canadians are already a top five possession team and they get a top three goalie in the mix, they lack elite talent, but to me, that spells potential.
Yeah, certainly.
So, everything's really coming together, and Carey Price, no matter how good the Canadians are, Carey Price, they'll go as far as he can take them.
Yeah, that certainly spells a team you don't want to meet in the playoffs. Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com is my guest on NHL this week. And Mark, on our Saturday show, we were talking about the Habs, and we played a clip from Gord Miller, who was on TSN 690, as you are as well. And Gord talked about how Claude Julien isn't getting enough credit for the job he is doing behind the bench with this Montreal Canadiens team. From somebody who watches the Habs night in, night out, just how good of a job is Julien doing with this club this season?
I couldn't agree more with Gord Miller on that subject. When we talk about depth, it's really hard to get three lines going, and that's essentially what you have with the Montreal Canadiens. You have eight or nine players with 10 goals or more right now, and Shea Weber and Jesperi Kotkaniemi are knocking on the door there. So you're getting offense in a sustainable way from a team that's essentially void of superstars up front. I was shocked when I saw the voting mid-season for the Jack Adams and that Claude Julien's name wasn't on there. I'd be really surprised if by the end of the year the award show in Las Vegas if he's not a finalist. In my opinion, he should be.
Yeah, the way he has the Canadians playing right now, he certainly would seem to be necessary to be in that conversation. Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com is my guest on NHL this week. And Mark, Claude Julien's doing a great job. And if you ask, who was on the hot seat more at the beginning of the year, Claude Julien or Marc Bergevin, a lot of people would say Marc Bergevin. He was, of course, here in Winnipeg earlier this week scouting the Anaheim Ducks. He scouted them in Toronto. And then, the Habs beat the Ducks last night in Montreal. Sort of a two-part question. Do you think there's a player in particular on the Ducks that he's keeping an eye on? And second part, for a guy who had been skewered for a lot of the trades that he's made and a lot of the, drama that had been surrounding the Montreal Canadiens, the moves he's made in the offseason certainly look very good today, particularly the Thomas Tatar acquisition from the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, and I was one of those guys that was criticizing him. The real issue was a lack of foresight. You go into a season, you're missing defensemen. You really don't have that elite guy up front. And it really seems like there wasn't much of a plan B. But Marc Bergevin has had a fantastic summer, by far his best summer of his career. And making big trades as well. Trading Max Pacioretty was a big deal because this guy was in on about 40% of Montreal's goals in the last 5 or 6 years. He was the guy that scored about 25% of them himself. So he made a really big gamble there. And at the time, Nick Suzuki was thought to be the big prize. But Thomas Tatar has outplayed Max Pacioretty this year. And Thomas Tatar was considered a throw-in at the time. So we have to give him credit there. We have to give him credit for how the Max Domi deal is going as well. It's still in its infancy, but it seems to be looking really good. Now, in terms of who he's looking for, my opinion should be, if you're going to help this team, you got to help Shea Weber. This is a guy that's gone through defensive partners such as Jordy Benn, David Schlemko, Alexi Emelin. These aren't exactly high-end defensive partners. So a guy like Cam Fowler might be of interest to Marc Bergevin, just because he can play those top minutes. And if not, there's a guy on the Winnipeg Jets that isn't getting much ice time in the form of Nick Petan. I think he might be of interest to Marc Bergevin as well. Not that I've heard anything. It's just he kind of fits the profile, undervalued. There's some talent there, low risk. So that might be something he's been looking at as well.
Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com is my guest on NHL this week. We're talking about the Montreal Canadiens, the Jets, and the Habs for their first meeting of the season tomorrow night. A game, of course, you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Mark, Jonathan Drouin is sort of that. He's second on the Habs right now in points. He was, of course, the big offseason acquisition 2 summers ago in exchange for Miguel Sergachev out of the Tampa Bay Lightning organization is where Drouin came from. How has he looked in his second season in Montreal? Are we seeing Drouin maybe take his game to another level? Because he's on pace probably for about 60, 65 points or so this season.
Yeah, he's on pace for a career year. Essentially, once Alex Galchenyuk got traded, the scapegoat hat got quickly put on Jonathan Drouin, and it's no fault of his own. Essentially, the Canadians wanted to kill two French-Canadian birds with one stone there, and get a center and get a French superstar all at once. Now, that didn't quite work out, but they still acquired a very good player. There are nights where he will frustrate you. He will look lackadaisical out there, lazy on line shifts, and then the next evening he'll burn the entire opposition and score a highlight goal. So it's ebbs and flows for Jonathan Drouin, but we have to keep in mind he's very young, and if this is his ceiling, he's still a 60-point forward. So, he still brings a lot of value to the Canadians, even if defensively he struggled. He wouldn't be able to point out his own goalie in a lineup, but the good outweighs the bad when it comes to Jonathan Drouin.
Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com is my guest on NHL this week. Mark, we've spoken a lot in this interview, of course, about the influence of Shea Weber and the impact that he has on the blue line of the Montreal Canadiens. Jeff Petrie is actually the top point getter for the Canadiens from the blue line. 37 points, sits fourth on the team in points. Does Petrie deserve to be talked about, maybe not among the elite offensive defensemen in the NHL, but in that sort of second tier of offensive defense?
Yeah, well, I'm glad that the Canadiens rescued Jeff Petrie from Edmonton because he was playing essentially the same role there, but what happens is when you're carrying the puck all the time, you're bound to lose it, right? Mm-hmm. So Jeff Petrie does lose the puck, once or twice a game, He'll create fantastic outlet passes or skate it out himself 98 times a game. So again, the good outweighs the bad. While Shea Weber was out, Jeff Petrie was the Canadiens MVP by far. He was carrying the play. He was essentially playing a top one role with a mediocre partner and keeping the Canadiens respectable. So he's a huge asset, a very reasonable contract. And, I say to this day that he's one of the most underrated defensemen in the NHL and maybe even one of the most underrated players in the NHL. I can geek out a little bit and start pulling some numbers, but just trust me, his numbers are fantastic. He makes his team better and everyone he plays with immediately gets better. So Jeff Petrie's clearly a huge asset for the Montreal Canadiens.
Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com is my guest on NHL This Week. Of course, with the Jets coming to Montreal for the first time this season, it'll be the first time that the Jets players can get reacquainted with their former colleague, Joel Armia, who, of course, came over in the offseason, sort of been a mentor to Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who's having a great rookie season for the Montreal Canadiens. How important has Armia been to Kotkaniemi and making him comfortable in the NHL? And how has Armia been as a player this season? We know he missed a number of games due to injury.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I just wrote about him for the Montreal Gazette, and one of the really fun things right now is that the Canadian third line, it's an all-Finnish line. So you have Arturi Lehkonen, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, and Joel Armia. And Armia's kind of the uncle there. He's the old man on that line, believe it or not. but his ability to win one-on-one puck battles is through the roof, and that's something that Kotkaniemi definitely needs to learn to do. He's got a big body, but he hasn't quite filled out yet. He doesn't have that strength, and he's learning from Armia how to use that frame to win puck battles, whether it's in open ice or on the boards. He creates a lot of scoring chances. He doesn't have the best finishing touch, if you'll allow the pun there, but those three fins, when they're together, they absolutely control the play. So considering he was another kind of throw-in in a Marc Bergevin deal, given the cap situation with the Jets, it worked out very well for the Montreal Canadiens.
Mark Dumont of TheAthletic.com, my guest on NHL This Week. Mark, final question for you. We've talked about a little bit about the trade deadline, and you mentioned that Cam Fowler of the Anaheim Ducks might be a target, maybe even Nick Petan if you're putting on your prognostication hat. How does Marc Bergevin handle sort of this unexpected situation that the Habs are in, where no one really thought of them as a Stanley Cup contender? They're sitting pretty, though, in the Eastern Conference. How does he balance maybe using some assets to bolster his lineup versus mortgaging the future of the Montreal Canadiens?
Well, I think the key here is don't believe your own hype, right? And I have to give him credit. I don't think he is buying into the hype this year. He knows this is the second youngest team in the league. They're going to take time to mature. So ideally, you sit tight here. If there are any opportunities, you exploit them by using your cap space. There's, I think, four other teams that have more cap space than the Canadiens. So they can use that as an asset. But they're not going to be in the rental business. They're not going to be using future assets to pick up veterans, unless it's a seventh round pick for maybe a fourth line center type move. Right now it's boring, but you have to sit tight if you're Marc Bergevin. Make your move in the summer, not at the trade deadline, because the costs are going to be just through the roof. And we'll see tomorrow how the Winnipeg Jets are a huge measuring stick for the Montreal Canadiens. But we'll see how they perform there. And if they do good in this next little stretch, because they're going to be playing the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and other strong teams, maybe you start to believe your hype, but they need to perform well against teams like the Winnipeg Jets before you really start investing in this edition of the Montreal Canadiens.
Mark Dumont covers the Montreal Canadiens for TheAthletic.com. You can also hear him, of course, on TSN 690 in Montreal. Mark, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining me.
All right. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Take care, Mark.
Cheers.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
I don't think we get too focused on what other teams are doing or how they're handling their contracts. It's what works to give the Toronto Maple Leafs the best chance to be successful and to maximize our window here with this young core of players. So when we were going through it and projecting out where everyone's going to sort of come in at, we had a range of how much we can spend and put into these players, and then the pressure will fall onto myself and our management team to fill out the edges around the core.
Toronto Maple Leafs general manager Kyle Dubas, after the Leafs signed Austin Matthews to a five-year, $58.17 million contract extension on Tuesday. I suppose we should be happy that the NHL didn't just cancel their slate of games on Tuesday to only keep the focus on the Matthews extension.
But, they tried.
The Toronto Maple Leafs and the organization and their fans that are happy in knowing that Matthews will be under contract for the next 5 years. His salary cap hit for those next 5 years is a hefty $11.6 million. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mindell, Sean Assor with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Austin Matthews will certainly be well paid over the next 5 years. It's an interesting sort of tactic that he is taking, though. Instead of going for the entirety of an 8-year contract, which the Leafs themselves say they would not have been able to afford salary cap wise, because an 8-year contract was probably going to cost them in the neighborhood of $13 or $14 million per season, he signs a 5-year deal. It's not quite a bridge contract, but it's not a max contract at that $11.6 million total, and the Leafs are counting on that sort of difference in the $3 or $4 million will allow them to keep more members of their core together, namely Mitch Marner, who is next up for the Leafs after the season, in trying to get him under contract. It's an interesting tact. I mean, from Matthews' perspective, I think it makes a lot of sense. There's no reason for Austin Matthews, 21 years old right now, that he needs to sign an 8-year deal. You sign a 5-year deal, I mean, you're set for life regardless. $57 million and change. If you're not set for life, then you
got problems.
You got problems. If 58.17 isn't enough for you to, you know, be able to live on for the next the rest of your life after that, you've done something wrong. So for 5 years, you sign that $58.17 million contract, and then boom, lo and behold, you're going to strike it rich again when you're 26, 27 years old. You're going to be able to sign at that point in time, quite possibly, an 8-year contract at that point, and who knows what the NHL salary cap is going to be like. Odds are it's only going to go upwards, and if you continue to develop as one of the best players in the NHL, if you're healthy, which has been a problem for Austin Matthews, but let's say you're healthy and over the next 3, 4, 5 years you're a point-a-game player and you are hitting unrestricted free agency when you're 26, 27 years old, well, then you can sign an 8-year deal worth $14 million per season or $15 million per season, depending on what happens with the salary cap. So this is one of those situations where a shorter contract, I think, works well for the player. I think it works well for the team. It makes a lot of sense, and if I'm one of those 21-year-old superstars, and there's a litany of them who are going to become restricted free agents this season, at the end of the year, I'm not sure that I want an 8-year deal, because all that does is it ties me to a team for additional years that aren't really necessary, because you don't know what the landscape's going to look like. So you sign that 5-year deal, Sean. You make yourself set for life in terms of $40 million, $45 million, whatever the number is. In Matthew's case, we know how high it was. You're set for life, and then boom, you can strike it rich again 5 years down the road from now when you're hitting your prime again at 26, 27 years old. Makes a lot of sense.
It's really interesting, and just reading up on this and doing a little research for the segment, a lot of NHL executives saying that this deal raises the bar in a significant way for the shorter-term deals. It's usually 10 years for these type of players, but now these 5-year deals are coming in. Some executives not too pleased with it. They're saying that it could skew the landscape moving forward. One thing that's really...
I don't buy that argument.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're just jelly.
Yeah, I don't understand
that
argument.
They don't have players to sign of this caliber, so they're complaining about something.
Yeah, well, and I'm not sure what their argument is that they're trying to make, is that who is this bad for? I mean, the idea that the second contract was going to be where the team holds all the leverage, well, that's clearly hasn't happened because general managers can't stay out of their own way. You know, had they actively used that leverage, you know, when they had the opportunity initially years ago, then maybe that would be the case, and maybe this would change the landscape. But that ship has sailed, so that everyone knows that superstars, and these guys are superstars, out, you know, on their entry level deal, sign massive contracts in their second contract. So Austin Matthews was going to sign a massive contract, yeah, whether it was going to be for 5 years, whether it was going to be for 6 years, or whether it was going to be for the 8 year maximum. And Mikko Rantanen this offseason is also going to sign a massive contract. And Rantanen will probably take the same approach that Matthews did, because he says, hey, I can strike it rich twice. I'll strike it rich right now, you know, $50 million, whatever the on 5 year deal, whatever it's going to be. And then I'll strike it rich again 5 years from now, where I can sign that max deal at that point in time. This is the players, I think, realizing there's no reason to give away 8 full seasons when you don't know what the landscape's going to look like 8 years from now.
So much uncertainty, especially in the NHL with the salary cap, with the potentials for lockouts. And what's really interesting about this deal is how much he's making in bonuses. The Leafs are paying the majority of the contract in bonuses.
Right.
He's going to be making $30.4 million in bonuses handed to him at the beginning of next season and the year after.
Mm-hmm.
Only going to be making league minimum.
Well, we had Bill Daly on Saturday's show.
Congrats, by the way, 10 years.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And thank you for creating the montage of great moments in Ezra Ginsberg.
Oh, the fun I had listening to that.
I bet you did. The sound of Ezzy snoring will probably resonate through your head for years to come.
Richie saying, my favorite part was the shower story, showerhead story, and Richie laughing saying, like a barn animal.
Well, he is a barn animal. He's not here to defend himself. Ezzy's not here to defend himself, but he like a barn animal. He was showering with a hose. What's going to happen, and what's, I think, we had Bill Daly on, and one of the questions I asked Bill Daly is, what is ownership going to bring to the table as one of their key issues in the next CBA negotiation? Because we know players don't like escrow and things like that, and it's going to be that signing bonus thing. That's where the NHL owners are going to say, we have to get rid of these signing bonuses, because there's not a lot of franchises that can pay a guy like Austin Matthews $30 million in one calendar year.
Yeah, then that's just it. A lot of teams can't afford the luxury. Majority of the small market teams don't have that kind of money to dish out at the beginning of the season. Willy-nilly, $31.4 million in a year, pretty much, for Austin Matthews.
It makes the contract buyout proof. Because the signing bonuses are guaranteed. Mm-hmm. And I understand it from the player's perspective. Yeah. He wants even more certainty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that's going to be an issue I see, where the owners are going to say, we need to remedy the situation. Only X number of percentage points can be guaranteed as part of a signing bonus, something like that.
Absolutely. And just one other thing on this, which I found extremely fascinating. They're calling this the older way contract, because Crosby, Malkin, Kane, and Taves all signed 5-year deals coming out of their ELCs.
Mm-hmm.
All of those players won cups during that 5-year period. So really interesting. And
well, if Austin Matthews doesn't win 5 cups in the next 5 years, he'll be a bust in Toronto.
And what's really interesting is that the Austin Matthews agent used to work for the same agency that represented those players, so he maybe learned this trick of the trade a little while ago and applying it now again.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah. I mean, if you're Mark Scheifele and you're looking at what's happened to the landscape of the NHL since you signed that contract and basically sold yourself short, and I don't mean that in a negative sense, but he signed the big contract with the Jets when, in hindsight, he probably should have signed a 5-year deal, and think about how much money he would have gotten paid when that contract expires, how much more.
Same thing Nathan MacKinnon.
Yeah, absolutely. I think players are going to obviously rethink how they're going about signing those contracts when they are really close to superstars or on the verge of becoming superstars in their entry-level deal. When we come back, Luke Korak is going to join us. Luke covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. The Blues are one of the hottest teams in the NHL, and with games in hand, they are knocking on the door of a playoff spot in the Western Conference. Luke Korak up next to talk about the on-fire St. Louis Blues. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Sean Assor. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Lou Korak. Lou is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. St. Louis Blues 7-2-1 in the last 10 games, winners of three in a row to now sit 1 point out of the final wild card spot in the Western Conference with three games in hand on the Vancouver Canucks. Lou, good evening and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are you guys?
Doing very well, Lou. How about yourself?
Good. Good. Things are going well in St. Louis with, it seems like the hockey team's gotten back in order here and playing well, and it's got this fan base feeling good about things going on right now after a really slow start this year.
A really slow start, and I think that most people sort of counted the Blues out and just thought it was, you know, another disappointing season in St. Louis. But, you know, since the year the calendar turned to 2019, the St. Louis Blues are one of the top teams in the NHL. They're 9-5-1 in their last 15 games since December 31st. What do you attribute the change in the fortunes of the St. Louis Blues to, the St. Louis Blues team to?
Well, it's pretty simple. They're just playing better, and it really starts from the crease on out. They're getting good goaltending from Jordan Binnington, and you know, I don't think anybody in their wildest dreams would have imagined we'd be talking about Jordan Binnington backstopping the Blues this year and getting them back in the playoff race, but here we are. And ever since they've called him up, you know, he's been nothing short of spectacular, and he's given this hockey team a shot in the arm. He's making saves. He's making the saves he's supposed to make. He's making saves that where he's maybe bailing some mistakes out. And, you know as well as I do, a good goaltender can help carry your hockey team. And, you know, it all starts there, and it's really resonating on out. Defensively, they're really tightening up. They've outshot their last 17 opponents in a row, and they're limiting the shot attempts. The grade A chances are slowly but surely down to next to none now, and they're getting timely goals. They're, you know, they're guys they're expecting to get production from or producing, except for maybe a Jaden Schwartz. For the life of me, I can't understand that one, considering how hard he continues to work. You know, I've never seen anybody as snake bitten as him, but he continues to, you know, contribute offensively, and you're getting it from Ryan O'Reilly. Vladimir Tarasenko's heating up. Braden Schenn's playing well on that line. That line with O'Reilly, Tarasenko, and Schenn right now have 14 points in the last three games. And, you know, they're just getting contributions all up and down the lineup. But really it starts with the goaltending in Binnington.
Yeah, Lou, you talk about Ryan O'Reilly, and I just his comments when he was leaving Buffalo, just about how it weighed on him, the lack of winning, and you know how you could just see the psychological toll it took on him. Now that the Blues are in a playoff hunt, I mean, he's got an 8-game point streak going, 4 goals, 4 assists. Is this guy leading by example, just showing how badly he wants to get to the postseason?
100%, and he's been doing it all year. And it's funny that you mentioned, really, since the turn of the calendar, the Blues played the Rangers on New Year's Eve, and they lost that game 2-1. A game they had no business losing. I think they outshot the Rangers that night. I know they put up 40 or more shots in that game, and Henrik Lundqvist was just absolutely incredible. I believe they outshot them 40-18, if I'm not mistaken, and they lose the game 2-1. We go into the locker room, and there's Ryan O'Reilly sitting there all by himself, and with just the most bewildered look that I've ever seen. And to me, it almost reminded me of how maybe he felt in Buffalo, almost the sense of, I can't believe this is following me here with the kind of talent that we have here. And from that point on, yeah, you're right. They've just really turned it on. And it's funny because Mike Yeo, when he was here, obviously before he got fired, he had even mentioned that, you know, you assemble this kind of talent together. And when you get this many new kind of players, it's not going to just click instantaneously. It was going to take some time. Probably he would have liked to have had a little bit more time, and he's spot on. It's just taken some time for this group to finally gel and to finally figure out who they are and what they are and what their formula is for winning. Now, did anybody envision that Jordan Binnington was going to come in and, you know, be the force that he is for them right now in goal? No. But, you know, the players have just come together. They were 10 points out of the final wild card spot going into January 1st, and we all thought there's no way they're going to get back into this. There's too many teams to jump over. You know, a 10-point deficit's just, you know, immense. With the parity in the league, it's almost next to impossible to do. But here they are, and, you know, they continue to take care of what they needed to do to get back into this. But I think the teams that were in front of them also fell back to them. And that's just, to me, a reflection of where the Western Conference is right now. But, you can't control what the teams, you know, around you are doing. You can only control what you do. And they've been able to take care of their own business. And here they are knocking on the door.
Luke Korak of NHL.com, he's the St. Louis Blues correspondent, is our guest on NHL This Week. And Lou, to your point about some of the teams around them and the Blues' performance really since that loss to the New York Rangers, you look at the advanced stats. They're the top possession team in the entire NHL in the calendar year 2019. You have the Blues have three games in hand on the Vancouver Canucks. They have two games in hand on the Minnesota Wild, a Minnesota Wild team that just lost Mikko Koivu for the remainder of the season. Should the St. Louis Blues almost be considered as a favorite to try and get one of those final Western Conference playoff spots, or even be able to catch the Dallas Stars for the third spot in the Central Division?
Well, that's a good point that you bring up, because I've actually been thinking about that for the last couple of days. I still think that they have an opportunity to jump into that third spot in the Central Division. Now, I know the Dallas Stars have been playing really well. Mm-hmm. They've been taking care of their own business. But, I completely agree with you. I think they are a favorite now, all considering where everybody had them going into the season. Now, there's, you know, I don't know too many people that had the Blues on the outside looking in when this season started. They were almost a darling pick to be one of the teams that were going to challenge Nashville and even Winnipeg, and even I was one of them. I felt that if things fell into place and if they played up to their capabilities, I felt that they deserved to be in the conversation with those two teams. Now, rightfully so, the Jets and the Predators, they've earned their way there. They were the top two teams in the division last year, and rightfully they're right back up there again this year. But, I think now that they're knocking on the door and you have these games in hand, I think they should be considered a favorite. But keep in mind, their schedule is going to be tough with them playing the fewest amount of games. You're going to be playing a whole lot of hockey here, especially in the month of February. The next three weekends, they're playing back-to-back. And from here on out, everything for them, they don't have more than a day off in this calendar month. So it's going to be a daunting month for this team. It's going to be a big challenge. But the way they're going right now, obviously, winning breeds confidence, and this is certainly a confident hockey team right now.
Yeah, just looking at their schedule, I mean, February is as compressed as it gets, but to me what jumps out is their opponents. I mean, they got Nashville back-to-back, they got Minnesota twice, they got Nashville once again at the end of the month, they got the Stars. I mean, that's the Avs, a lot of Central Division opponents. I mean, the way they're playing right now, this is a prime opportunity, if they can keep it rolling, to kind of get some valuable points within the Central.
You know, what's funny about that is the Blues are in this predicament because, to me, the teams that have been underneath them, they've played down to their level of competition, and they've been really good against the top-tier teams in the league. That's what's made, really, the first half of the season with them all that more puzzling. They're going out there, and they're losing to the teams that they should beat, and they're competing, and they're beating the teams that are right up there with them, or probably teams that you would consider maybe better than them. So this is probably what they want. They know they're going to go up against some tough. They got Tampa Bay tomorrow, which is as good as it gets right now. They're obviously the top team in the league going in, and those are the teams that have been getting their attention. So
it's a challenge, but I think it's one that they're looking forward to, and they know, and I've talked to a number of players when they play these teams that they get their attention because they know if they don't give them their best, they're going to get blown out of the, they're going to get blown off the ice. So these are the kind of teams that they want to play. These are the teams that they're competing against for those spots, and you know, going into those situations, you control your own destiny, and I think that's what they want.
Luke Korak is our guest on NHL This Week. Luke covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. Lou, when the Jets and the Blues met earlier in the season, and it's sort of hard to believe that they won't see each other again unless they meet in the playoffs. They're done with their regular season schedule between each other. I couldn't help but be sort of stunned at how disengaged Vladimir Tarasenko seemed. And you'd heard maybe rumblings earlier in the year when the Blues were going through their tailspin that he might be available or he might be on the trade block. Well, I mean, he's like the Blues team themselves, he's a whole new player in 2019. He's got a 5-game point streak. He had 3 points against the Blue Jackets a couple games ago. He's got 7 points in his last 5 games. Are we seeing the Vladimir Tarasenko that we're used to seeing back sort of performing for the St. Louis Blues?
Yeah, I think so. And, guys, let's be honest here. You hear it all the time, and it's cliche. Your best players have to be your best players. Well, he's one of your best players right now, and he should be one of your best players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when they beat Columbus Saturday night 4-2, he comes up with a big goal right after Columbus gets back in it, and it's one of those where he's just driving the net, and he's diving at a loose puck and knocking it in. When you're seeing one of your top players doing those things, it gets the attention of everybody else on the bench and your line mates as well. They appreciate that kind of an effort. And, you know, he would never admit it. But guys, I'll be honest with you. I still think in the early part of the year he was tentative coming off of that shoulder injury, and I just think the shoulder was affecting him maybe as much physically, if not mentally, as anything, because it was an injury. It was kind of a freakish injury in the last game of the regular season last year. And, you know, he went through the rehab and everything went fine. But, you know, you see Tarasenko on the ice, and he's in those prime shooting positions. And Ken Hitchcock says it best. He's one of those guys on the ice that can score from anywhere. And, he's a pure shooter, and he was passing up opportunities to shoot the puck. And I couldn't understand it. And you would ask him about it. And, you know, as any player is not going to make an excuse. He wasn't making excuses for it. But I believe the shoulder was bothering him. I finally think that he's finally in his groove right now. He feels healthy. He looks refreshed. And, you know, playing on this line now with Ryan O'Reilly and Braden Schenn is really, it's invigorated everybody. And, you know, Ryan O'Reilly can do that for you. He did it for David Perron before David Perron went down. Perron had a 13-game point streak and was probably playing the best hockey of his career. So Ryan O'Reilly's just kind of brought that kind of an influence on everybody else. He drags everybody else into the fight. You know, when you can drag a Vladimir Tarasenko into the fight, I think that gets everybody's attention. And, you know, this is probably when you want him playing his best hockey, when they're making their biggest push right now.
Lou, I just want to take you back to last night. The Blues rally to beat the Panthers in the third period. They score 3 goals in the third. I mean, comebacks are a great, you know, they're great for team morale, especially in the third, but how much more enjoyable is it, both for the players and, you know, as someone that covers the sport, when it's on the father's trip and you get to see that kind of joy and jubilation?
Yeah, that was something else. And, you know, I've been on the dad's trips with them before, and they're 7-1 in those games right now. So they tend to play very well when they've got their fathers on the trip. And, you know, that was a game earlier in the year last night that they probably lose. And it's just a different attitude. And even when Florida scores that goal early in the third period last night, you never got a sense that they were out of it. You can just see the guys just kind of regrouped and said, okay, let's go. If we're going to make our push, we've got to do it now. You get a big goal from Colton Parayko that gets them right back in the game, and that's just where that confidence is right now. You know, once they got that to 2-1, you almost got a sense that they were going to even that game up, and not only just even it up, but get the 2 points out of it. Because that's just the way things, the ball's been rolling for this team. That, you know, that confidence is there. Guys are playing together. They're playing for each other. And Tarasenko's a perfect example of that. You hear it from him all the time. He said, guys are really playing for each other right now. And, you don't want to look bad in front of your dads, no doubt about it. And, last night, I think they were pretty proud of the boys with the way they were able to come back. It's not a position that you want to be in. It's tough to come back in this league. the Blues have been in that position before a number of times this year where they've lost 2-0 leads and come out of the game not victorious. So that one had to feel good for them. And it's the second time this year they've won a game where they've trailed after two periods going into the third. And coincidentally, both of them have been against Florida.
Last question for you, Lou. Lou Korak, St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com, is our guest. Jordan Binnington, we mentioned him off the start of the interview. He's been just a revelation in goal for the Blues. 921 save percentage, 1.88 goals against average in his 11 games played since really taking over the job from Jake Allen. This is a guy who was a 2011 third-round pick of the Blues. He's been predominantly an AHL goaltender throughout the entirety of his career. He had one NHL game entering this season. Why should people have confidence that Binnington can keep this going long-term, and he's not just one of those goalies? We've seen a litany of them over the years in the NHL who gets hot for a period of time.
I just think because of the position that he's come from, I think when they drafted him, not many gave him really a chance to jump up in the ranks and be able to get to where he is. But he's just continued to work hard. And the thing that's impressed me about him the most is last year when the Blues were kind of in disarray with their AHL situation and didn't have their own affiliate, they were sharing San Antonio with Colorado, obviously. Well, Jordan Binnington wasn't even playing down there. They wound up sending some guys because there was just a litany and a glutton of players down there. They had to send some of their own guys elsewhere. They had guys playing in Chicago. They wound up sending Jordan Binnington to Boston's AHL affiliate in Providence. And that's not an easy thing to do. You don't have your coaches. You don't have people teaching you there. You're almost kind of left out on an island all by yourself. But he went there and played fantastic for them, wound up being an AHL all-star, and really just he drew the attention, deservedly so, and he just continued to work, and he was determined to get here. And you know, when he went to San Antonio this year and played well and really had no choice, he got the attention of Blues management and said, hey, you know, what have we got to lose at this point? It wasn't working out with Chad Johnson, and so they brought him up and gave him a shot, and he's just kind of taken the ball and run with it here. And you know, it's something that's really gotten the attention of Doug, not only Doug Armstrong and management, but the coaching staff and the players, and they're feeding off of that. And he's got a real low-key demeanor. He doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. He just goes out there and does his job. And you got to like the fiery attitude that you see in him when he's playing. And is he going to be able to keep this up? It's going to be tough because obviously there's going to be more video out on him. And, you know, as well as I do, you know, teams break this stuff down and they look for your tendencies, but right now, while he's winning, they're going to have to keep riding him because, you know, they still have some unfinished business to do here.
Lou Korak covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. Lou, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
Take care, Lou. Thanks again. When we come back, we talk about the trade from earlier today. The Nashville Predators add to their roster ahead of the NHL trade deadline. We look at the TSN trade bait board as well. More to come. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Wednesday evening, welcome back to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys, located at 982 Portage Avenue. At Keener Jerseys, making a better jersey is just what they do. To have your jersey customized or to order new jerseys for your rec team, go to KeenerJerseys.com. Keener Jerseys, they're on your team. Got an email from the good folks at Keener Jerseys. They'll do more than jerseys. They do hats. They're going to do hoodies now. So if you want to get some personalized hoodies, you know, maybe you got a high school team or you got a, you know, what, any kind of hoodie. Maybe we need some Illegal Curve hoodies. I think Ooh. I like that idea of that right there. A solid warm hoodie. You're a hoodie guy.
I love hoodies, and yeah. I have too many hoodies, but I would take an Illegal Curve hoodie.
Yeah, there you go. So maybe you will talk to our good friends at Keener Jerseys about that. But if you're in the market for jerseys, you're in the market for hoodies. Check them out, KeenerJerseys.com. Couple trades earlier today in the NHL. We're going to, with all due respect to the individuals involved, skip over the one involving the Ottawa Senators because that wasn't...
Next.
Next trade. That was a minor league trade at best. The biggest move of the day occurred between the Nashville Predators and the New Jersey Devils. The Predators, in exchange for a 2019 second round pick, acquire Brian Boyle from the New Jersey Devils. Later on in the day, they also acquired Cody McLeod from the New York Rangers for a 2020 seventh round pick, which is basically the equivalent of future considerations at that point in time. I do like the acquisition of Brian Boyle for the Nashville Predators. Obviously, the Jets and the Predators are sort of in a bit of an arms race along with some of the other top teams in the Western Conference. But the last time the Jets and the Preds met in Nashville right before the Jets had their player break on that Thursday night, the Jets really beat up the Predators. And I thought the Jets were way more physical than the Predators, and I thought that was a big aspect of the game. I like this Brian Boyle acquisition. I mean, he's not the player that he once was, but he's still a quality NHL player, and he's a big guy. So I think that this move, acquiring Brian Boyle in particular, is almost directly to counteract some of the physicality that the Jets bring to the table, as the Predators and the Jets are likely to meet in the second round of the playoffs in the Central Division Finals. So I think this Boyle acquisition is almost neutralizer for what the Jets bring to the table oftentimes against the Predators.
Yeah, and what we've seen late out of the Winnipeg Jets is that bottom six and their continued development and they're continue to impress. And Andrew Kopp says we got to give the coach a reason to not take us off the ice. And we saw that versus the Predators. I mean, the bottom six was tremendous against Nashville in a game where I believe the top six didn't score, I want to say, or had one goal or something.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was a game where
It was a
5-1 win. And I think if I recall correctly, Shifley, Wheeler, I want to say Connor, but don't quote me on that, were the only Jets players who didn't have a point. Maybe there was a defenseman as well in there, but I want to say that the Jets top line had no points against the Predators in that 5-1 victory.
Yeah, it was Lemieux, Appleton, Brian Little, Brandon Tanev, Brendan Lemieux. So we were talking about this before we hit the air that, yeah, to neutralize the bottom six perhaps, be a little bit tougher. Mm-hmm. I mean, David Poile came out after and said that we need to acquire some more pieces to beat the Jets in the playoffs. He named the Jets specifically. So it's really interesting. And yeah, a great guy in the faceoff is Brian Boyle. He adds a little bit of grit.
Yeah.
He's a playoff performer. He's been there before. He knows how to handle himself in the postseason. And it's obviously a clear improvement when focusing on their rivals north of the border.
I think it's a really smart acquisition for the 100%. Nashville Predators. I mean, I think everything about it, a veteran guy, I mean, he can still score. He's got 13 goals on the season. Mm-hmm. A lot of playoff experience. You mentioned that. I mean, you know, back with the Lightning and with the Rangers. I mean, his last two playoff experiences with the Devils and then with the Leafs haven't worked out as well as you would hope. But you go back to some of those teams, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the run they went on in 2015-16, he had 5 goals in the playoffs. This is a guy who knows how to perform in the playoffs. Nothing will faze him about the playoffs. And I really think that, you know, he'll be almost the Predators version of Adam Lowry. Mm-hmm. With Lowry's physicality, I think Brian Boyle will bring a lot of that to the table.
Yeah, big penalty killer, great in the dot like we were talking about. He's got a lot of veteran knowledge to pass along to some guys that are looking to get further in the playoffs than they've ever been. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting to see how he gels. And, you know, Cody McLeod also being acquired. So
Cody McLeod's not going to play for the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, exactly. An insurance mate.
If Cody McLeod plays one game in the playoffs for the Nashville Predators, I'd be shocked. This is a guy who plays 6 minutes a game for the New York Rangers, and the Rangers are one of the worst teams in the NHL. So if Cody McLeod is all of a sudden in your lineup, something's gone really haywire for the Nashville Predators. But Brian Boyle, I can see this playing Scott Hartnell was effective.
I like that comparison a lot.
Hartnell was effective for the Predators against the Jets in spurts. Really, the game's actually in Winnipeg where Hartnell came into the lineup for the Predators and sort of calmed things down for the Preds. I can see Boyle being a better version of Scott Hartnell
And he'll probably take less penalties.
In this year's run for the Predators. So a really interesting move for the Predators. The trade deadline, of course, a little less than 3 weeks away. So it'll be interesting to see what the Jets, of course, do to counteract the addition of Brian Boyle or to just sort of upgrade their team on their own. When we come back, Patrick Johnston of Post Media is going to join us. He covers the Vancouver Canucks. The Canucks are in the teeth of that playoff race in the Western Conference. They currently have a 1-point lead on the St. Louis Blues for the final Western Conference playoff spot. We talk about the team from British Columbia up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number two, Wednesday evening. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Sean Assor. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by Patrick Johnston. Patrick covers the Vancouver Canucks for the Vancouver Province, for the Vancouver Sun, better known as Post Media. Patrick, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Boys, good to be here. I guess I suppose in solidarity there is snow on my deck, but you would laugh about how much there is.
Is the city shut down? Do we need to call counselors in to deal with the ramifications from this snow? What sort of panic level are we at in Vancouver right now?
Well, we're not quite at the salt crisis levels that we got to last year, and I'm really hoping we don't revisit that. But if we need some sent over, I'll let you know.
Okay, well, you know that we're here for you, Patrick, in your time of need.
It's appreciated. Yeah. Very much so.
Obviously, Patrick, we brought you on to talk about the Vancouver Canucks, who, as we sit here on the 6th day of February, I don't know anybody that would have said the Canucks are still going to be holding down a playoff spot. Things are getting a little tight as the St. Louis Blues are making their charge up the standings. But right now, is it safe to say that the Canucks are still playing with house money no matter how the next five or 10 games shakes out sort of ahead of the trade deadline?
The word they've been using is, we just want to play meaningful games. Mm-hmm. They say is meaning playoff chase games in February and March. They're definitely in that. They're happy about it. I think they would argue that that's a sign of progress. Of course, it is a broader sign in the sense that it's a total turtle derby, and it looks like we're going to get that last wild card spot with a point total that is going to be like 7, 6, 5 points below what it's been almost every season the last five. There's a sort of a bit of a house money thing, but I think, in the end, it's a team that is essentially pleased with the direction they're going and pleased that they're still in it.
Patrick Johnston, our guest on NHL This Week. Patrick covers the Vancouver Canucks for Post Media. Patrick, it sort of jumps to my mind. Which team would you rather have right now? The Canucks roster and the Canucks prospects playing at Utica? Or the team in Edmonton with the best player in the world of Connor McDavid?
It is so interesting that we can even ask that question. Mm-hmm. Because, obviously Connor McDavid is the guy you want. But I look at that team, and I think I retweeted it earlier this afternoon. They'll sort of, if you hadn't traded anybody, you just, stuck with your draft picks and the lineups that the Oilers could have had, say, from the last, guys still playing, and there's like the, Sam Cogliano and Pajarvi, and that's at the bottom end. And then you're talking about guys like Eberle and Hall, and, the list goes on. It's a team that could have been so much better and has been such a train wreck, and it has so many problems. I mean, God, we're looking at how they're going to have to figure out how they're going to get Andre Secker on the roster, and they're going to have to waive guys. And it's such a mess. It's hard to argue against picking the team here, especially with Elias Pettersson, the way he's played. I mean, he's not obviously McDavid level, but he has become such a sort of phenomenon in this town, and the way he's playing and what he sort of means for this club in the years going forward as he becomes a more mature athlete. I've got to go with Canucks. I'm, obviously biased because I cover them, but I just look at all the problems the Oilers have on ice, and then, of course, all the mess they are off ice. The Canucks have... they're not a perfect squad by any stretch of the imagination on or off the ice, but They certainly look solid in comparison, and that's something that people might have laughed if we'd said that, even last summer, but they're at least moving in a forward direction, that's for sure.
Patrick, other than Elias Pettersson, what's been the biggest pleasant surprise for you this year with the Canucks?
It's been a few different things. I would say Jacob Markstrom, I think, has been a story. Ian Clark came in as the new goalie coach, formerly with Columbus and actually in Vancouver years ago, but came back and revamped his game. And Markstrom is playing with a steadiness, I would say, that matches the confidence he's always had. He's playing well, and he's a big part of the story of why they've been in so many games. Even that losing string they were on in November, he was playing well. And, almost every night it felt like he was getting asked a question about a goal that went in that, wasn't his fault, that went in off a foot or somebody's backside or what have you. And he said, those goals have been going in all year. What am I supposed to do? It's gonna turn itself around, and it has. And he really hasn't had many goals go in like that. I mean, perhaps the goal in Washington last night would end up being the winning goal, which might have been hit by high stick, but certainly hit him in the back and bounced in the net. It was an unfortunate bounce and certainly not the kind of goal that he's been letting in or dealing with in the last 2 months, I would say. He's probably been the most pleasant surprise, especially when you look at the standpoint of the fact he came back with the same group of defensemen as they did last year, a group that was not very good last year, has been better in parts this year, but also in some degrees has been worse. So, yeah, Markstrom's got to be your story there.
Patrick Johnston of Post Media is our guest on NHL This Week. We're talking about the Vancouver Canucks. And Patrick, Elias Pettersson has absolutely been a revelation this year. And we saw, some of his skill set on display at the All-Star game. I was following along on Twitter, which probably was a bit of a dangerous area for me to go. And your colleague and one of our favorites, Ed Willis, who, of course, we know here in Winnipeg from his time with the Winnipeg Sun covering Winnipeg Jets 1.0, sort of referred to Elias or there was discussion about maybe him having attitude problems. Can you maybe shed some light on that situation? And has this been one of those Twitter overblowing something, which is tends to happen more often than not, or is there truly a story here that the Canucks are trying to maybe quell?
No, I think it was the former. It was definitely a case of perhaps some missing context in the comments, and so as a result, overhyped, overblown Twitter discussion. And even the original comment, the tweet that sent it all off, was misunderstood. I think it was a question perhaps of poor framing. And, I've talked to the guy in question, and, I think he said, he kind of blew up on him and he didn't intend it the way it did. But Twitter is what it is. Mm-hmm. And there's just no stopping that. No, Ed's point was essentially this, is that, Pettersson is, he comes across, at times perhaps as a bit of a prickly sort. But it's not so much that he's rude or defensive. There have been a couple instances where there have been questions that he didn't like, and he, kind of stonewalled. And I think that's fair enough, and that's his right. And I almost wish more players would do that. I think they should hold us. We hold them to account. They should, at a certain level, hold us to account. They should expect, that we're going to come in with a dialogue, especially when you're coming in every day. You're talking to the media every day, as he's ended up essentially doing. It was an issue of, there was a particular moment where, in recent weeks where there was one in particular I can think of, but there have been a couple, in general, where, he perhaps was a bit short with a reporter. But in this particular case, he actually followed up, later that day and, essentially apologized for his manner. And some of that's about, his own sort of, adjustment to English as a basic issue, and mm-hmm. just sort of, kind of the Canadian vibe, the way we ask questions. And I think for the most part, he gets along really well. I mean, interestingly enough, when they came back, this week, or sorry, I should say last week from the mid-season break, there was the first sort of session with Pettersson. He was asked essentially a question, I guess, about the playoff chase, and he couldn't remember the word he was looking for, and the word was standings. He went with the more sort of British or sort of European, soccer kind of table, as the expression goes, which is a perfectly fine word to use, not one that necessarily we're used to, but, you knew what he meant, and And as the scrum was breaking up, he sort of looked at Ed, actually, and another reporter, and said, what was the word I was trying to find? And they said, you mean standing, don't you? He goes, that's exactly it. So, you know, even there, there's a question, there's a situation where he's turning to us and asking us for, you know, help. And so sure. it's a question, you know, honestly, there is a respectful exchange. You know, I think there have been moments perhaps where, you know, understandably, as a young player coming in, he's not sure what he's dealing with. He's certainly not dealing with the same level of media the way even a Canadian junior hockey player does sometimes. You know, in Sweden, obviously hockey is a big sport, but it's not the number one sport. And, you know, he played in Timrå, which is a smaller club, in Växjö, which obviously was doing really well, but also a club up north. And you know, there weren't a lot of reporters around, and he didn't have 3, 4, sometimes 5 TV cameras looking at him. And I think the Canucks have been managing him a little bit, working with him a little bit, just getting used to that routine. And I don't think it's anything that really is too big a deal. I think that was at the point, was that, listen, there have been moments where, you know, the exchange has been not necessarily where we're used to, and yet, you know, because of that, the team's working with them. I mean, you know, let's be honest, we know how hockey teams are. They'd rather the conversation got kept dull, and I'm sure they're having discussions with him about, you know, let's
keep it as dull as possible.
Think about how it all works, right?
Patrick Johnston is our guest on NHL This Week. Patrick covers the Vancouver Canucks for Post Media. Patrick, between Bo Horvat and Brock Besser, which former first round pick that's on pace for a career year has been more impressive?
Bo Horvat. I mean, Besser's playing well, and, you know, he's playing really well now. He's dealing with injuries before, but Bo Horvat, just the way he's evolved his game into a really true two-way center. You know, he was hearing huge minutes at the beginning of the season because there were injuries to Brandon Sutter and Jay Beagle. And, yeah, he's been so outstanding. And his scoring's tailed off a little bit lately, but honestly, like, he's done so much often with so little. And that speaks again to sort of where the Canucks are at in their development. They need to find some more wingers. But, you know, Bo Horvat, without a doubt, is having a fantastic year. And the contract he's in on, you know, he's getting $5 million a year, and he's going to be on that for another 4 or 5 years. It's such an incredible value contract. There's just so many interesting things to say about Bo Horvat right now, and most importantly is just in the way he's playing.
Patrick, I have to ask you, how are beer sales going for Shotgun Jake?
Well, they tailed off. That's been a challenge. Jake Virtanen looked like he'd really turned a corner earlier this year. Was at 11 goals quite quickly, and, you know, I mean, some of it, he's been asked to do more of a checking job. He's been playing a lot with Brandon Sutter and Antoine Roussel, essentially on a shutdown third line. The Canucks have been kind of running with 2 scoring lines, 2 checking lines, and he's found himself lately on the checking line. So that's some of the story there. But I would say, I mean, he scored the other day, but I would say that, you know, a lot of it has been about just, you know, what the team wants more of him is just seeing him more sort of on the puck. And they want him driving the net. They want him creating stuff more than he has. And that's been a transition for him. I mean, it's been an ongoing process ever since he left the Dub, and that, you know, all of a sudden he's not the biggest, strongest, fastest kid out there anymore, that everyone's just big and fast and strong. And you have to find other ways to beat defenders. And so that's still a challenge for him. I know that certainly has his attention. I mean, it looked like a couple of weeks ago he might actually be a scratch. He wasn't, but I think that got his attention, and we'll see. You know, I mean, obviously that line has played well on last night in Washington, and you know, but it's still a problem. He's an NHLer. I think the team still believes he could be more. And obviously, the fan interest is there given the Shotgun Jake trend, where, you know, people are down in beers whenever he scores. So, you know, he's at 12. They'd like to see him. You know, I mean, I think he can still get to 20. He's going to have a bit of a run out at the end of the year. But, beer sales are down.
Patrick Johnston is our guest on NHL This Week. Patrick covers the Vancouver Canucks for Post Media. Patrick, obviously a scary moment earlier this week with Alex Edler smashing his face on the ice. It seems like he's, all things considered, could be a lot worse for wear, but yeah. he is okay. Assuming he's healthy ahead of the trade deadline, this is a guy who's a pending unrestricted free agent. How does that play out?
You know, it's interesting. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think the diagnosis, I believe, came up today was he had a concussion, but no actual fractures or anything like that.
Hard
to believe. You know, if things go well, hard to believe. Yeah, absolutely. Given how, you know, basically lost his balance and was twisting one way and ended up putting his face right into the ice without being able to brace himself or anything. You know, assuming he's able to, you know, come back in a week or so, you know, that gives you, what, a week till the trade deadline. Most chatter has been he's going to re-sign. The team seems really keen on re-signing him. They have talked somewhat openly about the question of, well, what if you trade him now and tried to re-sign him in the summer? That, you know, that almost never happens. You can count on one hand, maybe in the last, you know, decade of instances like that. And the team really values his presence. They're very open about that. He's been essentially their number one defenseman. He plays in all situations. He's on the number one power play unit. He's been an important penalty killer. You know, plays tons of minutes at even strength. You can see why other teams would like him as a result. You know, the Tampa Bay Lightning kicked tires on him last year. You know, he's a guy that a top-end team would love to add as a guy on their second or third, even third pairing. I mean, he's a guy that can play in your top four. You know, when you're contending for the cup, he's the kind of guy that would undoubtedly be useful no matter where you put him in the lineup. That said, he also has a no-trade clause. Yeah, you're right. His contract's up at the end in the summer, but he also has a no-trade clause. And, you know, I asked Jim Benning point-blank about that a few weeks ago, and Jim was clear. He said, listen, if Alex doesn't want to go, there's nothing we can do about it. In the end, if he wants to stay here, he's staying here. There's not really up to us. So we'll see. I mean, I could imagine... You know, I could imagine a scenario where a top-end team comes to him and says, listen, we really want to trade for you. You know, then he'd have the other question, you know, what's going to happen contract-wise? And then that's a whole other decision for him. I suspect he's not going anywhere. He's too important to the Canucks. They don't have a lot of depth on defense. They do have Quinn Hughes hopefully coming, you know, perhaps at the end of the season, definitely next season. Ollie Levy obviously was hurt and would have been in the lineup by now, I think. But he's still in their plans. But other than that, you know, they got Ben Hutton, who's been playing well, but I think they look at the depth they have. They don't have a lot of depth. I think that's been a lesson. And so from that standpoint, it's from their perspective, it's hard to let a guy, a known quantity like Edler, go.
Patrick, can you provide a little bit of clarity or just as to why Don Cherry is saying that Elias Pettersson is able to do what he is doing because of Anton Roussel?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, Canucks games are on pretty late, so... You know, I don't know what notes Don's being handed, but, you know, I mean, it was funny enough on I guess it was yesterday he said that, and I went and looked it up, and the two of them all season have spent 42 minutes combined on the ice together. So that's
Don,
you know,
being
Don on ice time. So, you know, I mean, they did actually end up spending some time on the ice late, and I think Roussel set up Pettersson's late goal there. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's sort of that notion that, you know, the hard-edge guys protect the – more skilled guys, but, you know, Pettersson, the reason why Pettersson's doing so well is he's better than everybody else. That's simple. You know, it's not really complicated here.
Yeah, the game is easy when you have that amount of skill with you.
Exactly.
Last question for you, Patrick. Sure. You know, obviously the trade deadline, like we mentioned, a couple weeks away, a little less than 3 weeks away. The Canucks currently in a playoff spot. Can you see any scenario in which Jim Benning adds to this roster ahead of the trade deadline?
I really don't. I mean, the most important factor, I think, is the fact they're hosting the draft this summer. Mm-hmm. And they want to be seen going across the stage as many times as possible. They've already added a couple extra picks in the sixth round. You know, I don't know if they're necessarily going to make another move. They are a bit thin in goal right now. As Thatcher Demko was hurt in warm-up in Philly. And so right now they actually have an emergency call. Mike DiPietro, who played for Canada at the World Juniors, is actually up backing up right now. Mm-hmm. He's not under contract, but he's under a sort of, you know, emergency recall. They don't have any other NHL goalies on an NHL contract. I think they're hoping that Mike McKenna and Philly, who they tried to pick up earlier in the season, will go back on waivers and they'll scoop him up and just be able to send him to Utica. But if that doesn't happen, you know, that might be something that forces their hand there. They might have to bring in a depth goalie and then they have to give up a draft pick. But they're really, that's beyond that, and like you said, you know, you asked about Edler. I mean, Edler might be something. They might, you know, if they could perhaps sell Brandon Sutter on someone, they'd like to, I think, move forward with Adam Gaudette as their third center. But right now they've got four. So that's really all you could see. It's more as a seller. As a buyer, you know, they'd love to add a winger. They'd love to add Mark Stone. You know, they'd love to add a guy like Michael Ferland. But both those players obviously have so many suitors, And, you know, it's going to be a challenge. And they don't want to trade. They don't have a ton of, they got some good prospects, but they don't have a ton of prospects. And like I said, they don't want to trade picks. So it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to see them being buyers at the deadline. You never know, Jim Benning. But Jim Benning generally tells you what he's thinking. And so far, he said he's not trading anybody.
Patrick Johnston covers the Vancouver Canucks for Post Media. Patrick, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Thanks, boys. Take care.
Take care, Patrick. When we come back, we're going to have one final segment. We'll maybe take a look at the out-of-town scoreboard from what was a quiet Wednesday evening in the NHL. Stay with us. We're up. We're coming back. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Wednesday evening. Welcome back to NHL This Week. A quick programming note with the Jets and the Senators playing a matinee on Saturday afternoon in the nation's capital. It means it's an early start for Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Set your alarm. Be sure to join us bright and early 7 a.m. for 3 hours of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll get you set for the Jets and the Senators and then the Jets and the Sabres on Sunday afternoon as well. So no rest for the wicked. Saturday morning, 7 a.m. with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard. Only two games tonight in the NHL. In Toronto, the Maple Leafs riding high off of the contract extension that Austin Matthews signed, defeat the Ottawa Senators by a 5-4 margin. Matthews getting his 24th of the season, John Tavares getting his 32nd of the season. So the Leafs 5-4 victors over the Senators. And in New York tonight, in a shootout, the New York Rangers defeat the Boston Bruins by a score of 4-3. Kevin Hayes, whose name has been bandied about, got a goal, his 12th of the year for the Rangers as they defeat the Bruins in that shootout. It'll be a much busier Thursday night, of course, in the NHL. Quiet Wednesday night tonight. Want to make note, big thank you to a couple of our sponsors that I haven't been able to get to yet. Bernstein's Deli and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. These are both long-term sponsors of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Both local businesses. We encourage you to support both Rumors and Bernstein's. For more information, check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com and bernsteinsdeli.com. Sean, a couple minutes to go on the program on this Wednesday evening. The Jets draft pick, first-round draft pick, is now up there on the TSN trade bait board. Quickly, do you see after the 25th of February the Jets owning that first round pick, or do you think they deal that away?
I think they're going to deal. It's an important asset for a lot of teams. It's a good bargaining chip for the Jets. I mean, they can put together a package with it. A lot of people saying Nick Petan's name. We were talking off air. We don't see Roslovic as part of a package, but no. I mean. Short answer?
Yes.
Yes.
Fair enough. I like it. Short and sweet. Sometimes that's the way to go. That's it for the Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. Big thank you to everyone who joined us. That includes Patrick Johnston of Post Media, Luke Korak of NHL.com covers the St. Louis Blues, and Mark Dumont of The Athletic covers the Montreal Canadiens. In case you missed any of those interviews, the show will be available on IllegalCurve.com. It'll be available on TSN1290.ca, and it's also available wherever you get your podcasts. Download it, get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer and co-analyst Sean Assor for joining me on the program this Wednesday evening. Until Saturday at 7 a.m., I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and we wish you good night and good luck, and thanks for listening to NHL This Week on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.